Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, you'll notice behind me that we're quite light on guests this evening. The reason being, poor old Righty boy got sent home from work. Hot Boss said, "You look ill, Righty, go home." And he came all feverish, not because of Hot Boss, I don't think, but he's been sent home sick. So get well soon, matey. We'll see you soon. Camps has had to go to a concert. It's hard life, isn't it? And I'd forgotten that Jeff was at MacTech this week, so he's not here. I thought I'd sent Bart Bouchotts an invite, but he says he hasn't got it. So the wheels come off, and it's my fault entirely. So there we go. Joining me to discuss tonight's tech goings-on of the week. Starting us off, Muller.
Hello.
You all right, mate?
I'm all right, mate.
What's been going off?
What, with me personally?
Yeah, with you.
Not a lot. I've had a few drinks with some ex-colleagues, and that's about it, really. And play with that Echo Dot that I bought off you.
And?
It's been playing up a bit. I keep having to move it because it keeps losing connection, but I'm trying a new position now.
Okay.
We'll see.
Trying a new position with Alexa. Okay, we've got a show title ready.
Yeah.
Next to him, Dr. Rich Harkness. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Very good.
Now then, how's the things up there? Oh, hang on. I started just Jeff. I didn't understand. By mistake. I keep using forget to use the code words. Just Jeff. Yeah. How's the studio going?
It's good, mate. It's good. I've got to be honest. I need to get myself back into the rhythm of making something. So I'm gonna start up again next week, I think.
Well, you've been away though, haven't you? You
went to we got it sorted, and then I had a go at doing some stuff, but couldn't figure out how to kind of dub the audio over the top of the footage I'd done, and then it was time to go on holiday. So
yeah, no, slow progress, mate. You'll get there.
It'll get there in the end. I'm not pushing it.
Good man. Right, the week in tech we're into. It's done the intros. Then best get on with it, eh? Get it over and done with. This is the shortest show of the year. 20 minutes will be done, I reckon. Unless someone's got a really contentious topic. We should get the chat room to pick a story, actually, for us to argue over. Start us off then, Rich. Yours. Tell us yours.
Oh, yeah. So this was just a one that I came across today because I thought it was an interesting story, and it obviously ties into my medical background because it's really nicely demonstrates the power of mobile devices in helping progress our understanding of medicine and the body. And it's regarding a game, just remind myself of the name of the game, Sea Hero Quest. And this was created to help researchers understand what happens in dementia better with people. And they've found some very interesting findings from that. So what they've discovered is that one of the early signs of dementia with people is they start losing their way and getting lost. And I guess it's one of those kind of very subtle things that, you know, you would keep dismissing until it's really start to get very obvious. But what they found is that it's because so many people have been involved in playing it. Nearly 2.5 million people have been involved in playing this game. And they found that it's a graduated age decline. It happens steadily throughout the course of our lives. Our sort of navigational skills deteriorate with age. So it's one of those things that the more they understand this, the more they might be able to come up with very easy ways of picking this up earlier in life and noticing people who are maybe having a more rapid decline than those of their kind of age group, if you like.
So I was thinking that, you know, if you look at presbyopia and presbycusis, you know, they're starting in your 20s. Are they suggesting that actually the dementia could be something that starts even that far back?
Well, you probably wouldn't label it as being in dementia, but it basically starts to taper off from your 20s. So
it's, you know, it's got the same kind of facets or characteristics of presbyopia and presbycusis, yeah?
it's a steady decline throughout life, and I can tell you that this is not something that we knew before. You know, this is brand new kind of information. What really struck me about this as well is like I said, you know, you've got 2.5 million people around the globe playing this game. I guess it must be, I haven't played it myself.
Does it work?
So how does it work? So it works in the game. You're given a series of, there's like a series of games. So there's things like it will give you a sequence of buoys in the sea.
Yeah.
And you have to navigate your way around the buoys in the correct pattern, or there might be waterways that you have to navigate, and you also have to fire a flare back towards where you started from as well. So kind of, you know, having that kind of visual spatial memory of where you've traveled and where you've come from.
How much sure so, I can do this now?
Well, it says that, let's have a look, how much it declines, because it's quite significant. Something like, I think it was 75% accuracy, 74% accuracy at the age of 19, but by the time people were 75, it dropped to 46%. And statistically, it proved what some of us might have always suspected, is that, and no offense, ladies, but men were slightly better at navigating than women.
That's a statistic.
That's fine. Well, I don't know if you guys, but certainly my good lady often walks into a shop and immediately walks out of the shop in the wrong direction. It fascinates me.
If you'd like to send any letters of complaints, it's Richard Harkness at... Don't forget to put Dr. Richard Harkness out.
It might just be my wife, but I guarantee she'll turn the wrong way every time we come out of a shop.
Mate, we got married at Gretna Green, and on the way up to Scotland, my wife asked me if we had to go through Wales.
We can do. It'll take a while.
We might, if you want. But...
So it showed that, and also people from Nordic countries and coastal nations were better
navigating on the sea.
Yes, surprising, isn't it?
So could there be a bit of learn there?
I think
nurture versus nature.
They suspect there's genetics there. You know, the people who have come from coastal communities have probably got there by being part of a seafaring community at some point, and they've just got a natural predisposition for successful navigation. Otherwise, the ones who didn't probably got lost at sea. So,
well, I mean, you've just quoted a stat there. So if 2.5 million people have played this, they must be getting a shitload of stats.
Oh, absolutely tons of information. They said if this was done in a lab, it would have took them 9,500 years to collect this much data. 9.5, just think of that number, 9.5
That's awesome.
Thousand years.
Of research?
Of research. I mean, that's absolutely staggering.
That's only because some of them had got lost.
It's just a slower process as well, I think, doing things in labs, you know. But I love this. I love this. And what did they call it? Was it Health Kit that Apple brought out? You know, and research kit and stuff like that. So I think with mobile phones, as well as having the ability to, you know, distract us and do bad things to us, I think they could yield very useful benefits to our health in the future. I think it's awesome.
I've downloaded it. It's not finished downloading yet, but I'll give it a go and have a play. I'll get the kids to play it as well. But I mean, you said you haven't played it, but I mean, I'm wondering whether it tells you whether you're any good or not. And is there a benefit to improving? I mean, can you know, by repeating this navigational skill game, does it improve and therefore reduce your potential for dementia, or is there no?
It's a good question. Good question. It didn't mention it in the article, so I'm going to have to have a play of it now to see what it's like.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's free, So they obviously want plenty of people to play it. There are no in-app purchases.
Yay!
So it's got to be good. They've had to put version 1.3 out. So there's obviously a few glitches have occurred along the way, but good on. This is really a game where you simply, by having loads of fun chasing creatures around magical season swamps, you can help fight a disease that currently affects 45 million people around the world.
There you go.
Got any opinions there, Muller? Can you remember that we started this conversation or not?
My mum's just been diagnosed, so I've got first-hand knowledge of this. In fact, my mum kept...
Well, next time you go there, you can give her the app to play with, and that would be an interesting test for them, perhaps.
Yeah, I suppose I could. She's not... Well, I don't think she's as bad yet, but she was waking up in the night and then trying to look for things that she'd put somewhere that she'd left at home. So it was a bit weird, but...
In 1956.
Well, my mum's never been totally... She kept, always messed up words and forgot people's names and places, so I'm not sure. But anyway,
yeah,
it's a horrible illness. It's I mean, she's only at the early stages of it, and she's in her 80s, so...
My dad had a stroke a few years ago, and it was interesting that it affected his speech patterns. When he was being assessed in the hospital, the girl said to him, "What's your date of birth?" And he said, 5th of August, 1986. And she said to him, "No, come on, what's your address?" And he said, it's the 10th of September, 1941. And she said, "Really, is that it?" He said, "Yes, it's the 1st of March, 1931. And in his head, he was saying the 1st of March, 1931, every single time. He was saying it with utter conviction. And then he would come out with a sentence later on when he started to recover. And he would put a word in that was a correct word, although however inappropriate it might have been at the time. But he was convinced he was saying the right word. And it wasn't. So he would say, and generally, on the whole was what he wanted to say. But he'd come out with, and generally, on the whore. But in his head, it was a WH.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. I found it really interesting. I'm like, "Dad, do you know that what you just said?" "No, I said whole." "No, you definitely didn't. You definitely said whore." And it was different. It wasn't the sound. It was a WH word. So he was getting WH words that were repeating on when he wanted to say on the whole, but not. And it fascinated me the whole time that he was having it. So, and I've got to say, I'm terrible for substituting words in my head at the moment now. The more I try and remember stuff, the worse I get at it. I've got to say, I'm crap at that kind of stuff. And I've had a bad old week with work this week, just remembering people pushing for stuff sooner. So I've been under a lot of pressure this week. Mm. My ability to recall stuff when I'm under pressure is just awful, just incredibly bad. I mean, it tumbles off a cliff, you know.
Yeah, it's harder, much harder to remember. Yeah.
You seriously, when you go out, Molly, you ought to take the app and let her have a go, see what happens.
Yeah. I'll have to get a link off you later, so there's not one in the chat room.
If you just, all I did, I've downloaded it already, but all I did was go to the Mac App Store or to iTunes Store and put in Sea Hero Quest, and it comes up for iOS, for iPhone, or for iPad. So,
yeah, I'll have a try, but I'll have to go down sometime before Christmas, I suppose. But it's a long way.
Yeah,
you have to do a little mini test in your house, you in with the kids, and then Sharon and yourself.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm interested to see if it gives you a result that you can compare then and see, or, you know, where it rates you.
Again. Yeah.
The other thing, I don't know, there's a bit of me sort of thinking, well, you can imagine someone playing this and going, "Oh, holy crap, I've got dementia." I don't think it's probably designed to do that, is it?
No, it's not diagnostic. No.
So it's, you know, whatever score you get is not representative of the fact that you're predisposition to... ending it.
On a similar vein, though, remember those brain training games?
Yeah.
I read an article recently saying that they were absolutely a load of tosh. They didn't actually do anything. So all that brain training, you know, whatever was going on, and people going, "Oh, I can do this now quicker." They were just learning. They weren't actually getting any better.
I think the thing with a lot of the stuff like that, Muller, is you lose it very, very quickly if you don't keep doing it every single day. So
yeah, Yeah,
it's no benefit. I mean, the thing with this, like you say, Ewan, it's not diagnostic at the minute, but there's nothing to say as they accumulate more and more data and start to figure out what is kind of like a normal reference range for your age group and sex, then that might be something that it does in the future. You know, it might sort of say, your navigation skills are very poor for your age group. You might want to, you know, discuss this with your doctor or something like that, you know? And if it gives people an early heads up, then that's awesome.
I can't think how they're going to do that. That's the trouble, is it? It's because, my local GP practice, they send me a letter to get me to go in to tell me that there's nothing wrong. And they send a letter if you're dying as well. You know, because it's just they don't want to do something different for dying compared to nothing wrong, because then you'd know that there was something wrong or there was nothing wrong. But it's kind of like frustrating when you go in and you're like, I've taken a day away from work to come in and for you to tell me that there's nothing wrong. Why don't you just write to me and tell there's nothing wrong?
Well, yeah.
Because when the letter drops on the mat, we get people having a heart attack because they think there's something wrong.
Yeah.
What?
No, exactly. That's the point, is that they call you in to say, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. Just the same as they do to call you in to tell you that you've got something seriously wrong, because otherwise you'd know that something was different.
Somebody can't get.
And I just work on the no news is good news principle. I've been to see someone and I haven't heard from them in a week. I must be all right then.
The different practices do it in different ways.
Good article, mate. Good. It'd be interesting to see. I'm going to play with that. I'm going to play with that and get the kids to play with it as well, because they can have it on their devices and we'll see what happens. Get Sharon to do it as well if she can open it. She can get off the home screen. My wife's doing well, actually. She took on my iPhone 6, and she's not a particularly great... She's not technophobic or anything, but she's a bit of a Luddite. But she's doing all right. I mean, she's using the Facebook, she's using the Snapchat and all that kind of stuff, and doing fairly well with it. She's managed to... Muller's had to pair the phone to a wristband, but she's collecting the data off the wristband okay. For a Microsoft band, so that's working well. Well done, darling.
Cool.
Well done, darling. What's your story, Muller?
Well, I've got a story, and I'll just post it now. Okay, it's about an app that... it's about an app that Google brought out to weed out those fake stories. But I don't want to just go on about the app. I just want to go about those fake stories themselves. I mean, how many times you see these fake stories? You debunk them online, only to pop up over and over and over again. So discussing really about fake stories on Twitter and Facebook and all of those, and how they've affected the elections here, elections in America, and people's attitudes, and even over Brexit, you're getting them constantly. And maybe this app could help a little bit if people are using Chrome. I've downloaded it anyway to see what it's like.
Okay. What did you think?
I've only just downloaded it, actually. But what I'm thinking, what I was actually want to talk about really is why are people so stupid? They believe all these stupid stories. I mean, the one on the, actually in the, there is that, that Hillary sold up weapons to ISIS. And there are a number of stories that keep coming about. And I keep going on. And every time you go on Facebook and say, that's a load of rubbish, people, you know, call your names. I mean, there was one, again, about Jeremy Corbyn that came up. And yet again, I says, that's been debunked so many times. Back off of it. And you just tell them about Snoops. Go and have a look at Snoops. And then post back if you can't find it on there. It might be true. But I'm personally giving up on some of these sites, particularly because of the amount of crud that's coming through and the aggressive people that defend them.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, but the other thing with this, I mean, this is good, but it's only alerting you to websites that are known to do this. But the trouble with a lot of this fake news, to my mind, is it gets shared all over the internet, so it ends up on multiple sites which might also do reliable news as well. And then, you know, and then it's on social media. So, and it's some of these things, I can't give you specific examples, but I know there's been cases where even, you know, supposedly reliable places like the BBC and stuff like that have picked up on, on a story, which has later been shown to be a load of, you know, nonsense. So I don't know how much. I don't know.
I think it's because we're in the internet age now, and there's too many bloggers. They're not journalists, and they're not checking the sources. And I did see a program on TV called The Right Stuff. It's on early morning, so anyone with a job probably don't see it.
Don't hold that up as journalism, for Christ's sake.
Well, at least he is a journalist or an ex-journalist. But what they discussed amongst themselves is the fact that journalism has gone weak. They don't check their sources. And when they do check the sources, they usually got an intern doing it who just goes online and checks it, sees a couple of blogs. That confirms it must be true then. So the actual truths actually are self-prophesizing, if you like. They're proving themselves true because they've been repeated, if you know what I mean. I'm not really putting that very well.
I think that one of the problems is the fact that Wikipedia pages get changed instantly when someone's died. And there's been a few obituaries issued, hasn't there, for people who aren't dead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where interns have gone and seen the Wikipedia pages changed, to reflect the death, and that's it. They've gone off and run with it. And I think the worst problem for the inaccurate meme isn't actually websites as much as Twitter. And that's just completely uncontrollable because I've seen the Trump stupid people, Republicans are stupid people thing that was on People magazine. That's been around, and that was debunked 4+ years ago. So it's kind of crazy that I think it's great that someone's doing something.
Yeah,
how effective it is, well, who knows? But
oh, it won't win at all. I think that's the trouble is that there's no checking the facts anymore, and it usually goes down to that. I mean, there was on this program actually, there was a famous person there, and I can't remember his name now, but he actually says, "I've gone online, and I'm hoping this happens and it doesn't get corrected when I die." He says, "Because I keep putting it in, and he's putting an entry on his own Wikipedia page, which he hopes will get picked up by the BBC and that when he's died." So I'll read it out, and it's complete tosh. And apparently he keeps going on there and putting it back in because he was quite near these days.
It'd be good if like the websites and social media and stuff had a little, just the option to sort of like click on something and say, flag this as false news or something like that. And it'd have to be moderators, but, at least it might surface some stuff that straight away it'd be like, no, this is, we know for a fact this is fake, and then it can just stop it. Because there's just stuff that goes round and round and round, you know.
Once it's out there, it doesn't go away, does it? And it's crap.
It'll die off for a while, and then a couple of years later somebody will try and recirculate it again, and because a lot of people have forgotten about it, it does the rounds another time.
Well, it's like pictures. Somebody put a picture on a social site with some letters next to it, and I said, just because it's got a famous person and some text next to it doesn't make it that person actually said that. Unfortunately, the one they put up was about Churchill, and I couldn't prove it was false. I spent an hour trying to, but but I couldn't prove it was true either. But at least I'm doing more than they did. I didn't just retweet it. I actually went out to see if I could prove it's true or not, or false.
People believe that stuff reinforces their own opinion, says Bob Beach in the chat room, for prejudices, regardless of the veracity of the story, probably because there's not so much pressure to fill the airwaves and news sites. Journalists are no longer rigorous or lazy or short of time.
Well, they're not even making simple phone calls, are they? I mean...
Why do people believe anything on Twitter? Well, a lot of people do.
I mean, they do, yeah.
They retweet without thinking.
I mean, you see some of the stuff, particularly for around sort of election times, both here and in the US, and the stuff that comes across. And if you actually dare to challenge it, you're just aggressively attacked and get called names that are unbeatable. But one's called "See you next Tuesday," you know. Yeah, no. And I've had that one given to me a few times, and in the end, I just block them.
There was a story out today on Slashdot that said the FBI have got a tool to monitor Twitter. All of Twitter, all of the time. which is phenomenal, if that's the truth.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. It's not looking for keywords anymore. It's just everything.
But I mean, my goodness, man, that must be flagging up so much stuff for them to look at, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think they look at
it. I think there'll be keywords then, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back to the 1950s, the Stasi were doing voice recognition, and they were looking for keywords.
But what is it the FBI want to find on Twitter?
Terrorists.
People who want to bomb Robin Hood Airport.
Yeah, well,
do they use Twitter?
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. There's lots of candid messages, yeah.
I know they're blocking a lot of accounts of extremist groups and stuff, aren't they? So
they're supposed to be interesting if they do. But then, how easy it is just to start up a new one?
Yeah, that's the trouble.
Just something that's just happened while you guys were talking. Has anyone had any messages come through on their calendar trying to sell them spectacles or something like Ray-Ban and Oakley sunglasses from $19.99 up to 80% off?
No.
It comes through as a meeting invite. I've just got one.
Yeah, right.
It comes through as a meeting invite, along with a whole pile of other people from iCloud or Gmail. And it's popped up 17th of November to the 18th of November 2016. RBOnlineShops.com, $19.99 Ray-Ban and Oakley sunglasses. And I can't delete it. Because it says, if you delete this, the person at the other end will know that you've declined the invitation, so they'll know it's a real email address, and I'll just get spam up the wazoo. So I've got to click maybe decline or accept or just completely ignore it
and hope they go
away. Yeah, no, but that's quite an interesting problem because it doesn't give me the ability to delete it without sending a notification back.
Mm. You bastards. I haven't got that at the minute.
No, I think Lee Peterson's had one of these. They were talking about it the other day in the Slack room, but that's the first one I've got was just now.
There's one going around to confirm your Apple account, isn't there? Because I've had that one.
Yeah, that's like an email type thing, which is, this has come up in my iCal. You've got an application. Do you want to accept, maybe, or decline? And I can't delete it without them knowing that it's a real email address. Bastards.
Can you block their email address?
Spamming should be a hangable offence.
A bit like my last story.
Have I got their email address? Oh, that's a good question.
Because you can block it, and then they won't get the...
I don't have an email from them. There's no address on it.
That's interesting.
I would have thought it was about to send... No, there's nothing. It hasn't come to my Gmail account or my... iCloud account or anything. Nope, nothing. I got no way of knowing who that is. Bastards.
I do get an email from people trying to sell me Ray-Bans, but I unsubscribe from their whatever they're sending. It comes back again. Just for the same people.
How do you fancy flying to New York in 3.5 hours?
Oh, Virgin. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so what's happened is Virgin have tied up with a guy who's, he started Boom. It's a Denver-based firm with a new supersonic, a generation of supersonic jets. And they want to introduce a transatlantic flight, similar to what Concorde was doing, 3.5 hours from New York to London. This thing is a startup company that's been backed by Branson and this guy, Blake Scholl, who's a former pilot and Amazon executive. This is quite amazing to me, that they're looking to provide an affordable transition across the Atlantic. So instead of being the multi-thousands, it'll only be £5,000, say only.
I was going to say, because I heard it was thousands as well.
Yeah, so they're talking about it being £5,000 to fly from New York to London. But you've got to bear in mind, I mean...
it's a small jet, is it? Just one person?
No. It's going to be very, very... It'll look like I think I haven't got a picture up right now, but it'll look like it's Concorde to a certain degree, be a little bit smaller. But Concorde was running at £7,500 when it finished to fly across, and that's not been flown now for 15 years.
Well, engines are much more efficient now, so.
Yeah,
says here on their website, leave New York at 6 a.m. make afternoon and dinner meetings in London, and be home to tuck your kids into bed. It says each way $2,500. What do they mean by each way $2,500?
Well, if you want to go one way, it's only $2,500. If you want to come home,
it's five grand altogether.
So it's $5,000 altogether.
Ticket. So a return ticket on Concorde was about $7,500.
A return, right, okay.
And that was 15 years ago.
Unfortunately, yeah. There was Nick Boom.
But the thing is, this guy, Scholl, his goal, here's a picture of the mock-up of the inside of the cabin. Yes, please, except there's not a lot of reg room, but you're only there for 3.5 hours, I suppose. It looks really, really good. His goal, though, is eventually to have affordable flights so that anyone can fly anywhere in the world for around $100.
That'd be awesome.
That's his ultimate goal. Ultimately, I want people to be able to get anywhere in the world in 5 hours for $100. To get there, you have to improve fuel efficiency, but step-by-step supersonic air travel will become available for everyone. This supersonic passenger air travel is no bullshit, and it's actually affordable.
But will the US let it fly over the land at supersonic speeds?
I doubt it.
No.
Well, at higher altitudes, it'll not be heard, though, will it? So
I don't know. Didn't the RAF fly over Yorkshire recently and break everyone's windows?
No, but they're probably flying far too low. If they're doing transatlantic flights or across Europe or whatever, that they're going to be at much higher altitudes. So
almost space.
That should be fine. I love this. I saw this today. I didn't know Branson had got involved in it, though. It's fantastic. I always thought it was a very, very sad moment when Concorde retired and there was nothing to replace it.
It wasn't just sad, though. It's like, hang on, we spent all this time going forwards from the space race up to the moon,
exactly,
to supersonic flight, and now we don't fly anywhere supersonic.
Exactly, it was awful. It's like we're going backwards in our abilities. That's hopeless.
But Branson wanted to buy all the supersonic, all the British Airways jets, all the Concorde, and they wouldn't let him. They refused to sell them.
That's bizarre.
Like he was going to re-engineer them so that they were airworthy. Boom have got the first 10 airframes. Through the Virgin Galactic manufacturing arm, the spaceship company will provide engineering and manufacturing services along with flight test support and operations as part of this ambition. But apparently there's an awful lot of people in Silicon Valley who've chucked money forwards for it as well. It's a very popular Kickstarter, in inverted commas.
That's a very expensive Kickstarter.
Yeah, no, it is. But there's a lot of people into it. So they want that travels. I mean, the thing was as well, with Concorde, you never had any... you never had any jet lag, did you? That was the big thing. Was you could go from New York to London, you had no jet lag.
No, I never anyway, because I used to be 24-hour man anyway. So.
Well, no, I'm the same. I went to Macworld and had no jet lag at all. They're all back because you work shifts.
Yeah. Here's a question, because I mean, to me, £2,500 one way sounds incredibly expensive, but how much is it like a business class ticket? If you did New York to London, how much would a business class ticket be?
Oh, more like 12, I would have thought.
No.
10? Let's go on Expedia.
I'm going to say, best have a look. I don't think it's that expensive, to be honest.
British Airways. Let's do the most expensive, eh?
Or first class.
Yeah.
The thing is these days of the internet and, you know, cameras and whatever, why do businessmen need to go abroad? Why can't they just, you know, pick up?
Because a lot of people say there's nothing beats the actual human interaction with people, and people make more, but they more deals are made that way, and more problems are ironed out just by spending time with people rather than doing it.
Yeah, that's what they say, so they get jolly.
Yeah, so we're flying on Saturday. We're coming back on Tuesday. And the cheapest flight is £3,160. Oh, hang on, no. Lowest business class is £3,160. And the cheapest first class is £5,684. And that never changes.
That's one way.
That's return.
So £3,000 return.
Yeah, but that's only business class. I mean, this thing's going to be a proper first class experience. So the comparable is first class at 5,600. So it's cheaper than British Airways first class return.
So, because I thought if they're going to be going against something, they're probably going against first class or business, aren't they? So yeah, that's an attractive proposition. And if you're the kind of person who travels, you know, that way,
you're not paying for it, I mean.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is, isn't it?
Or you have so much money that it doesn't matter how much it costs, you know?
Yeah.
I did some work for a firm in America a few years ago, a long time ago. And I produced the stuff for them and they said, oh, could you get it sent to us? Yeah, okay. And the amount to send it was going to cost nearly as much as it was to fly me out there. So they said, can you fly out and do the stuff? Yeah, all right, I'll fly out, no problem. And then they realized that they cocked up on the timings. They got it a week out. So in fact, they actually needed to fly me out the next day to bring it over. So they said, we've booked your flight out. You just got to turn up at South Terminal at Gatwick and catch the flight out. That's great, thank you, no problem. And I got there and the only flight they could get me was a proper first class seat.
Awesome.
So I had first class all the way to Detroit.
Oh, lush.
It was great. It was really great. And the bloke next to me was like, he was this old guy who clearly flew first class all the time. And he's like slowly drifting off. And I'm sat there like, what are you doing sleeping? This is great. I was awake for the whole thing and I was absolutely knackered when I got to the other end. But on the way back, I took a pill and that was me. I was out for a light because the seats were so long on this DC-10. I woke up and I go out and the woman woke me up to land. That was a good nap. Yeah, yeah. And I had no jet lag at all. It's great. comments in the chat room. Wake me up when the teleporters are operable, says Bromwith. Oh no, not Branson, says Bob Beach. He's obviously got a real problem with Branson. Cheap, less than a bloody MacBook Pro, says Bob Beach. It's tricked out MacBook Pro. It's good stuff. I don't know. I think we're definitely backwards as a species because we don't have supersonic flight available. It's one of those markers that, you know, when you pass that evolutionary point, then you know, you don't go backwards, ever. So I'm right up with Richard on that one. I spoke to him on the phone last week and he agrees.
Yeah.
Would you fly in it? Yeah, I always thought to myself, if Concorde was still flying and I knew it was coming to an end, would I try and save up enough money so that I could go on Concorde or we could all go on Concorde as a family? And, okay, I'm never going to afford £28,000 for us all to fly on Concorde, but... it would have been something that I would have done just to say that, you know, in my lifetime I did it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
That'd be great. I mean, I'm just, the thing that comes to my mind straight away with this even is going to see the relatives in India. I can't wait for this.
Yeah, because you had...
Eight hours was just to Dubai and then there was another 4 or 5 hours on to Delhi. So, God, I would love this.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Did you guys see the Impossible Drive as well this week?
I saw that on Horizon a few years ago.
Yeah, so they've got this Impossible Drive that's powered by microwaves, and basically it causes an explosion in the back, and that propels you forwards through the microwaves doing something with it. See, I read up on it. But it's an impossible engine. According to Newton's third law, it can't work.
It doesn't.
So, but NASA have been doing some tests on it, And one of the things that they were going to do was put this thing up that was about the size of a washing machine that was in a decaying orbit. And the only way it could maintain the orbit was if this thing worked, because if it didn't work, it hadn't got any fuel on it to keep the orbit up. So they threw this thing up, switched it on, and according to a story, allegedly, NASA are about to announce that it works.
Well, it worked in the lab, didn't it? They did it on the Horizon.
Yeah.
They did it on a bench, because everyone was poo-pooing it. But I think I posted a story in the Slack, and you had a go at me over it.
Did I?
Yeah. I'm sure you did.
Well, you like the science stuff.
Yeah, to slag it off, yeah. Because I think you brought that exact out, that it can't work. And I said, well, that's what they're saying, it can't work, but it is working, and they don't know why.
Yeah, they can't, because it's Newton's third law is completely smashed to pieces.
And it's tiny as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the size of a football.
It's impressive thrust. They reckon if they can get it working, it'll give you Mars in 70 days as opposed to 105. And that's 105.
That'd be amazing.
The closest of the orbits, the perigee of the orbit.
Well, that comes up in 2 years, doesn't it?
To Earth, yeah.
That'd be amazing if it's true, but like you say, they're going to have to go back and have a look at their laws of physics again, aren't they, if it does work, so...
Yeah, but they know that Einstein smashed Newton's gravity, didn't he? Because now they talk about Newtonian gravity to explain the movement of the planets, but it falls down completely if you look at Einstein's theory of relativity and the use of gravity within that, so...
Mm.
Again, I'm paraphrasing.
Let's not go down that road.
Before you send any letters in saying you and you're talking shit, you're an idiot. I know. Don't need to reaffirm it. Thank you very much. I'm very happy with that. Talking about writing in, we've had a couple of reviews. Thank you to someone in the UAE. Funny enough, you mentioned in Dubai. But we had a review from the UAE, which I know is not Dubai, is it? Or is it?
No.
I didn't think so. But there we go. This is from UAE iTunes. The Big Show is my favourite podcast ever. I always recommend it to my friends, and a few weeks later, my friends tell me the cool things that they've seen on the show, and they love it too. It's different from Twit TV Network. It's more fun and more casual. But Twit deals in proper news as opposed to us. I love BTN, but I can't wait for next week's show. Thanks very much for that. That's really kind. Super duper. If you'd like to leave us a review, then all you got to do is go to iTunes. One of the things that's really nice is getting reviews. And sometimes if people write bad reviews, that's okay. Even those are nice to read out sometimes. So please give us a review. Just tell us what you think. Just write it down. You don't have to put good. You don't have to put bad. We'll read them all out. But especially as well, please, please, please get some reviews for Kyle's new show, because he's there plugging away every morning relentlessly, giving you 5 minutes of news. Get on there, subscribe to that, and then please give him a nice review as well, because he works his ass off on that show. And I've done it for 2.5 years, three and a half years. And I know how much hard work it is. So he works brilliantly on that show. Please, please, please. Have a listen to the new show to start with, and then also give it a review in iTunes. Right. Have we got a cool thing? Richard, would you like to start us off?
Hot off the press, I'm gonna promote a movie. I went to see Arrival today, and it was fab.
Now, this is the one, Amy, what's her name in it? Amy?
Yes.
I can't remember her name.
I can't think I remember last name either, which is awful, isn't it? But her acting in it is superb. She's the highlight of the film, definitely.
Don't give it away, no spoilers.
No spoilers, no. But it's a science fiction film, and it's intelligent, and it makes you think quite a bit, and it's a lot of surprises in it. It's not a typical Hollywood film at all, and it's not, one of the things I'm starting to cringe at now is every time there's some sort of story about an alien invasion, it's just some sort of Independence Day type scenario, and it's not like that at all. So very enjoyable. And I partly went to the cinema because somebody that I really enjoy on YouTube, Cinema Sins, they said, you know, if you want different films, then go and watch this in the cinema. Otherwise, we're going to continue to get rehash after rehash. You know, go support some original cinema. So you know what? I'm going to go and see it. And it lends itself. It's the kind of film that lends itself to being seen on a big screen as well. So yeah, if you, I would definitely recommend you go and check that out.
Okay. I have looked at it and wondered, but I've got to say, as a planet, I think at the moment an alien invasion would do us a power of good. There'd be some unity for at least a few minutes while we were wiped out. And I'd rather die fighting someone else than die fighting each other, for sure.
Well, on the Infinite Monkey Cage, they were actually saying that an alien invasion is probably highly unlikely because they're far too intelligent to give a monkeys about us.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you imagine, though, if they came this year, it'd be like, everyone would be going, no, it's not normally like this. Don't judge us on this year, please.
The gaps are just too big, though, aren't they? That's the trouble.
I think we should edit 2016 out the calendar.
Unless they've got past the microwave drive and they're up to seriously flying around. But
generation ships.
But it is really enjoyable film. Go see it.
Yeah, no, give that a go.
I'm sorry I can't say any more, but I don't want to spoil it for people. No,
don't. If you want to do spoilers, then you do them in the Shite or Not room, or on at Shite or Not on Twitter. But no spoilers on the show. We're not a movie show.
So. Yeah.
Some good actors. I like Jeremy Irons as well. I think he's a good actor. Amy Adams. I think she's pretty good.
Oh dear, that was a pervy voice.
No, not at all. that was the jury's out on whether she's great, but there's a couple of movies I've seen her in where actually I think she does do a brilliant, an absolutely brilliant job.
Not Batman versus Superman. But that's
I can't remember. I saw her in what was the Hustle one? That was the American Hustle. That was quite, she was very good in that. I didn't think it was a very good film, right, but she was very good, so. Her character was very different from other characters. The thing that always impresses me about actors is when you can see them and watch them in a film and go, oh, I tell you who that is, and because they've changed their appearance or they've got good makeup or good, and you can't pick who they are because they strike so different, and then you oh, bloody hell, that was him, when you read the credits afterwards or something like that. Robert Carlyle's one of those. You see Robert Carlyle in Christ knows how many movies and films, and he's just utterly different. He plays, you know, he changes his character immensely. I think Ewan McGregor does pretty well with that as well. Everyone always raves about De Niro, and I always think De Niro has been De Niro up until recently. And I've got to say, in the last 5 years, he's been a completely different character in film. So maybe he was a bit of typecasting, but you know, he is a very, very good older bloke now. I thought he was really good in Intern. He was a completely different person in Intern. So. That's the measure, and there's times when I've looked at her in the end and thought, you're just the same person each time, but of late she's impressed me, so. And I don't, it's not because I was lusting after Muller, not at all. Muller, what's your cool thing?
It's a podcast. And I thought I'd save you some money this week. I know you're broke. I've posted the right one.
What the hell have you put in there?
It does come up as that. It's LBC. It's the James O'Brien's Mystery Hour.
We've had this before, but it is so worth it.
Oh yeah, it's come up as a picture on there for some reason and on my link, but just search for it; it'll come up. James O'Brien, and it's basically a phone-in show on LBC. I think it's on Thursdays if you want to listen to it live. But it's a fascinating listen. I mean, I like sitting there and going, I know that answer, and then realising it's 3 days late and I can't phone in.
Well, there is like a bit of a QI thing, though, as well, where you go in, oh, yeah, I know the answer to that, and you say it, and then you find out that what you said is the one that would have got you the air horn on QI. You're talking absolute rubbish.
Yeah. I get quite a few of them right. Or I'm pretty close, and I don't know why I can't get the proper link up. Anyway, James O'Brien podcast, and it's a fascinating listen to, always something different. And as James O'Brien says, you'll either laugh out loud or you'll learn something called both.
Is it a quiz format?
No.
Basically, what happens is that you can phone in. And you can either ask a question or answer a question, and you have to. There's a criteria. It shouldn't be boring, and it shouldn't. And it's to do with cars. There are rules. You can't look it up. You've got to know it. So if you Google it, that's against the rules. And if you think you've Googled it, you'll get shown up on the online. You know, you've got to know it, and prove that you know it, not just Google it. Because he's had a few people where clearly they're reading off Google. sorry, my headset thing's gone there, so I can't hear myself. So, well, that's about it, really. And then you can either answer a question or ask one.
So people ring up and say, do you know what I've always wanted to know? And then someone will ring in and go, I know the answer to that, and I know it off the top of my head. And one of the things he does is the qualifications for it.
Yeah.
So how do you know that piece of information that you know? And you can't say, I've just Googled it. You have to say, I know it because I did it as a project when I was at school, or I know it because I watched it last night on David Attenborough. Discovery, or I saw it on Mythbusters or something like that. And that's a perfectly good qualification for you to have, but you have to be honest about it. It's really good. It's a really good format. So Mystery Hour from LBC with James O'Brien. You can just find it on your iTunes account.
Yeah.
I'm subscribed to it now.
You'll do it. You'll do it, and then you'll go back through the feed and start listening from the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
Because there's so many facts that you learn about why stuff happens.
And last week's was a medical one on, and a doctor answered it.
Oh, yeah. Why does the beast... You might be able to see if you can answer this then. Let's test your knowledge here.
Oh, God.
Why does the BCG always leave a scar when others don't?
Oh, I know the answer to this.
I know the answer because I listened to Mystery Hour. It's only you, so don't make it like you're knowledgeable.
I actually did know the answer to this one.
No, you didn't.
I did.
All I can think is this something in it that destroys fat cells in your tissue or something like that?
Yeah, close.
It's close, yeah, because it's given under the skin and it damages and leaves a scar. And the reason that they always give it on the same arm is so that they can tell whether you've had it or not.
No, you got that wrong.
No, I didn't. That's what he said.
No.
They always give it on the same arm because it's an indicator of whether you've had it or not.
Oh,
it's what he said.
You better go back and listen to it.
I have listened to it this afternoon on the way back from the job I was on. And he said it's always given on the same arm so that people can see it.
He said that's an advantage.
It's an identifiable thing.
He said it's useful in countries like India, where people don't keep records or know what they've had.
That's right.
But he did say it's...
that's what I've just said.
Controversy on the
So there you go. I learned that this afternoon. That's why the BCG, it's an active bacteria that destroys the I think it probably does destroy fat. You said it because it's always sunken, isn't it? But it's because it's an active bacteria that's given it gives you
it's intermuscular, not into your vein.
There you go. I'm seconding Muller's choice there, so because I listen to that every week. I love it. My cool thing is it's a bit expensive. It's the Synology DS216J. So it's a Synology drive, so it runs on you. It's a network attack storage device, and it sits and burrs away on your network, and you store your stuff on it. This one comes in 16 terabytes. So around the studio, I've got around 80 terabytes of storage, and the big drives that I use are locked away in the cupboard. Or I take them home. I've got one drive that I take home all the latest footage. So if everything disappeared in a fire, I've got the last 4 weeks' footage always at home. This thing is two 8 terabyte RAID drives from Western Digital that are linked in there and RAIDed together. You can change the RAID on it, so you can have it so it's redundant, or you can have it as not redundant and just have it as an open RAID 0. I've got two of these whirring away in the loft that mirror each other. And they're £790 each, so they're not cheap, but they are super brilliant. They are really, really good. they can be, if you're doing video editing off them, then they can be a little bit slow at times. You get a bit frustrated with them, but that's only when I'm really powerhousing. If I'm just compiling a film to then push out to a client, they work well. But if I'm crunching a whole pile of clips, then they can get quite slow. But other than that, the speed of them's excellent. They're really, really good, and they're the best thing I bought this year, I think. I've run them now for 2 months, and I'm loving them. And the setup on it, I got, when I said I wanted to get a Synology drive and put them up there, one of the comments from Adam from the Maccast in the Slack room was, well, you're going to need your big boy coding pants on for that, because you know, that's not going to be an easy setup. And actually, it was a piece of cake, because I'm no coder in the slightest. The Synology desktop interface is brilliant, so easy to use. And with a Google search and a bit of help from some of the people in Slack, I worked out how to put the RAID back to a RAID 0 from the backed up RAID that's on it. It's brilliant, well worth it. If you're thinking about doing it and you're kind of like, I've got the money, I'm thinking about dropping it, don't hesitate, just get it. But it is a lot of money, like I said, £790 or 32 pence, but they are on Prime. So,
oh, good,
that's the three. Yay!
So, I got two while they were free. Yeah, absolutely.
It's Black Friday next week, so we're all going to be totally bankrupt.
They're going to be half price. You know, no, it's not that. I mean, it's poor old Ian Lewis. He's just signed up for Prime, and they've knocked 20 quid off it today because of the GT thing. You bastards.
Oh, what a bummer.
Yeah, so Black Friday's going to roll around, and this is going to be 300 quid.
Half the stuff on Black Friday's rubbish anyway.
Oh, I don't know. It is all right.
Actually, you mate, you guys, it's a good time to ask this. We're looking for a fairly smallish Bluetooth speaker. Anyone you recommend looking out for in the sales?
Get Amazon Echo, because the speaker on that is unbelievable. It's as good as your Sonos.
It's 50 quid though.
No, I've got the Amazon Echo, but no, I mean, sorry, I should have said like a portable one.
I've got a Boom one. You've got a similar one, haven't you, that you had on?
Bose Sound. There's a Boom Box, an Olixar Boom Box, which is okay.
It's about 20 quid, but it is quite good. I've got one of those, but not the Olixar version of it.
But the one that you've got to buy is a Bose SoundLink 3.
Right.
How much do you want to pay? Because the Bose is going to be pretty pricey.
Yeah, no, the Bose SoundLink 3 is, I think I paid about 300 quid for that.
That's too much.
There's a waterproof one, Jawbone doing one for about £100, and it's waterproof, totally waterproof.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's sort of more the, yeah, and it, like you say, it's for traveling with, really, so smaller, portable is more the priority.
I'll have to give you a link.
Yeah, Bose SoundLink 3, that's what you want.
How much are them?
They're 300 quid, but they're worth it.
But they're not portable though, are they?
They're the size of a little... I carry one around for you if I need a speaker to show films. It's brilliant, and it's rechargeable, and it lasts about 10 hours before you have to recharge it. And it goes in, the battery goes into, so if you're if you don't use it, because mine, I'll go and take it out and use it, and then it'll stay in a pack, and it could be in there a month before I use it again.
Mm-hmm.
And after,
it'll keep its charge.
Yeah, after a week, it shuts the battery down into like a sleep mode. And you have to do a little sequence of buttons to get it to wake up again. But when it wakes up, it's got full charge in it.
That's good.
It's brilliant. And the quality's just like you'd expect from Bose. It's just unreal. Absolutely unreal. What's the use case? Who's using it? Is it for the lads or is it?
Anchor have got one. Anchor stuff's good.
Yeah, Anchor's got one, haven't they? It was just when we were on holiday, you and we thought it'd be really good to have a decent speaker that we could all, you know, Bluetooth our music to.
Olixar Boombox from Mobile Fun, then, mate. 20 quid, and it's you can chuck it around and drop it on the floor, and it's pretty robust. And if you break it, you can just tuck it in a bin and get another one when you get home.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've got one of those.
I've got one they sent me for review. I wrote a review on, actually. If you go to BritishTechNetwork.com and look under /reviews, there'll be a review there of the Olixar Boombox to sway you even further, Richard.
Olixar?
O-L-I-X-A-R.
It's very similar to the one I've posted in the the Anchor. It's very similar to the Anchor one.
Right.
But it's cheaper. In fact, I've seen it as low as £10 on is it, what's that site called? It's the
I've put the link in the chat room. There we go. OLXR boombox from Mobile Fun. It's actually fairly quite. It's quite not weighty. It's really reassuringly weighty.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got the mine's exactly the same.
And it's really good.
I use it on the TV,
but it's $24.99 as opposed to £250.
Yeah, so it's quite nice looking actually.
Pros. It's under £25 and it's a steel. Sound quality is very good for average use. Weight is less, is easily lightest and longest to go across. And the cons, it's too much bass because it's for listening to music. It's not great for listening to spoken word, but it's awesome for music. There you go.
Excellent.
Quite often on a bit cheaper on this site as well. Occasionally, they sort of
I would say because go to Mobile Fun because they're good with giving us review units and stuff. They've sent some stuff and your drone that Verinda won at the Bash, mate, that was donated by Mobile Fun. So there you go.
Nice, very good.
They're good. They're good chaps. They've looked after us over the years. Cool. Where can we get a hold of you, Muller?
I'm Muller Biker on Twitter. And I'm always in the Slack room, although not so much these days, because people don't like being taken the mickey out of.
Oh, shut up, you big nonce. Christ almighty. Where are you, Rich?
At Rich Hartness on Twitter, HumanV2 on YouTube, and human-v2.com for the blog.
That looked like it was a bit of a stretch, mate, to remember that. I'm struggling.
Out of practice.
Yeah. Don't forget, I forgot to do the sponsors. Don't forget UK2. Look after them, please, because they look after us. Send them a tweet that says, thanks for looking after British Tech. And also, don't forget to check out Hoya as well. Hoya podcast at hoya.co.uk or Hoya_UK on Twitter. And Doc in the Mac Show was saying, I want to go to the Hoya bloke. I need to try and find out where my nearest Hoya bloke is. Just write to Mark Culshaw, the guy that comes on the show here and explains it all, and send him an email at podcast@hoya.co.uk, and he will get in touch with you, and he'll tell you who is your local rep in the US. He will send you in the right direction, fear not. They are a great global organisation, so check it out. Please look after them. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or you can join us in the Slack room if you've got the guts and can wear the muller. And all you got to do is send us an email then to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we will send you an invitation back with a few little rules, but nothing seriously. We'll be moving the show next week, okay? So we're going to go, Mac Show is going to be at 4 o'clock on Friday, and then we're all going to disappear for a curry, and then Big Show is going to be on at 8 p.m. On Friday night from now on. So Mac Show will be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Big Show will be at 8 o'clock at night on Fridays. Have a great weekend and hope you enjoy it. And Thanksgiving next week. That's why we're moving the show as well, actually, because I think we'll get no guests on if we're not careful. We'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.